Welcome to Inspirational Tales and an episode of With Kindness, where I am joined by guests who are making a difference in the world by helping others and spreading kindness. So today I'm joined on the podcast by Sarah De Jong from A Thousand Hearts. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thanks so much, Jez.
Not a problem. Can you please start off by telling us just briefly what A Thousand Hearts actually is?
Sure. A Thousand Hearts is a global kindness community that I started in 2016, and the basis of it is exchanging small felt handmade pocket hearts to give to people to carry in times of stress or grief or loss or sadness.
I absolutely loved it when I heard about what you were doing, your story, and I had to ask you to come on because of that. But can we go back now to before you started A Thousand Hearts? And can you just tell us a bit about what your life was like growing up and before all this started?
Sure. We can go way back if you want, back to 1976 when I was born in Launceston, Tasmania. I started my life in the north of Tassie and moved when I was a couple of years old down to Hobart. And the reason for that move was my mother unfortunately became very unwell with anorexia and had to go into a psych hospital. So back in the 70s, people weren't very good with eating disorders, particularly in a mother of three children. So they didn't really know what to do for her, which is, a very sad story for her and then for us. So we moved down south with my dad, who has stuck by us and looked after us all our lives, which is amazing. And mum's okay now. We have a good relationship, Yeah, but after the psych hospital, she moved overseas and we didn't grow up with her. So, there was a lot of grief and loss in my very early life because of losing my mother. Even though she was still alive, we lost her until I was a young adult, actually, when we reconnected. So, we were lucky to be raised by a fabulous father, and we had a stepmom for a period of time. And in many ways, my upbringing was privileged, but I guess, emotionally it was quite tough in certain ways, coming to terms with mum not being around. And so then grew up in Hobart from when I was about three or four. So I do consider myself a Hobart girl. Went to school, went to uni, did the usual things. And then I guess leading up to Thousand Hearts, I got married when I was quite young and had my daughter when I was 24. So followed by my son. So they're my daughter's nearly 22 now and my son's 19, so I've got the young adult thing happening at home, which is beautiful. And in 2015, my husband and I split up, which was obviously very painful and quite a horrifying thing to go through when you've got young children. And it was sort of probably about 6 months after that, when I was settled in my new place and getting, adjusting, I suppose, that I started A Thousand Hearts. And part of the reason for starting it, I guess, was that through those periods of difficulty in my life, I realised how important it is to be offered kindness when you're struggling. And I really wanted to give that to other people and share that understanding in a way, in a way that would help people, I suppose, who are going through struggles.
So was this like a light bulb moment that you had, or how did you actually come up with the idea itself?
Definitely not a light bulb, more of a dimly flickering switch for a while, I think. I had been working in a hospital prior to my marriage breaking down, and I'm not a medical person. I managed the volunteers and then managed the pastoral care department in that hospital, and I was organising a memorial service for people who had lost loved ones in our hospital, and we wanted to give people something to take away from that service that they could hold as a memorial talisman or token of the love that the person that they had lost had, I guess, left in their life. And I came up with the idea of pocket hearts. I had heard, I didn't invent pocket hearts, they're something that have been around in, different forms. And I thought, I think I could probably make one. And I thought felt would be really nice to make it out of because it doesn't fray and it's quite sturdy. And so I drew a design of a heart myself. I drew the shape and made some, essentially, because I've always been a sewer and a maker. So it was very easy for me to do that. And so I made, I think, about 50 for the people that we expected to come to the service. And so that's kind of where it started from, with the idea. So it didn't start as A Thousand Hearts. It started as this gift to give people at this event I was running. And the memorial service then got cancelled and I was left with these 50 hearts. Yeah. So I just gave them away to people through my Facebook page, through my personal Facebook page, and just went, you know, I've got these pocket hearts, and explained the purpose of them and just said, if you'd like one, send me your address and I'll post it to you, no cost, and I'll cover postage. And so I just sort of, that was the first random act of kindness I did with the heart. So I just thought, let me do this because it'd be so lovely for people to receive them. And of course, through this time, my marriage was falling apart around my ears, and my life was going in a very different direction to what I expected. And so, yeah, I don't know. I felt instinctively, I think, that random act of kindness would be good for me as well as the people around me. And it turned out that it was.
So why is it called 1,000 Hearts? Why 1,000?
Yeah, so after giving out those initial 50 hearts and seeing the response, I was really blown away by what that meant to people to receive, because people's automatic response, and I think any listeners will really relate to this and understand this, they were like, let me pay you for the heart, let me cover the costs of postage. I don't want you to have to foot the bill. And I was just like, please let me do this. It's actually a really beautiful thing for me to do. And, yeah, I'm not giving you my bank account details and I'm not giving you my address. You're not allowed to pay. So that was a very important thing for me, that it wasn't attached to payment or any kind of agenda on my part. It was just an act of kindness. And people just responded to that in a really beautiful way, which made me realise this is something, you know, this is something that could be meaningful for a lot of people. And so then I decided I'm going to make 1,000 of these little hearts, and I'll start a Facebook page especially for that, because I'll be connecting with strangers. Well, I assumed that I would start connecting with strangers. I don't know 1,000 people to send a heart to. yeah, so I started up a Facebook page and I just called it 1,000 Hearts, because that was the challenge that I'd set myself. And I let people know who were in my circle, and they told other people, and that's how the page and the project began. So initially it did start as a personal challenge, a little bit like the 1,000 Paper Cranes story, you know, as a single act of kindness, I guess, or a single project designed to share kindness. So initially that was what I intended, and I thought, I'll make 1,000 hearts and I'll send them out to people, you know, send them out to a few different people who can distribute them, so I wouldn't be giving out every single heart, that other people could have that experience of sharing the hearts, which I thought was a very powerful thing. And I thought that would be it. I thought that I would, you know, finish that process, send out the hearts, and my life would go on as before. But that's not how it turned out.
So what happened after the first 1,000 hearts got distributed?
Yeah, so I sent them out to about 70 or 80 people initially who volunteered that they, you know, they said they would like to be part of it. So I sent them out a little package and, you know, printed out a little flyer on my home printer and sent them off and paid all the postage. And I got a little a grant sort of thing from Long Distance Love Bombs at the time, which was another kindness project that I had been following, which I just loved. And he gave out some little monetary amounts for people who wanted to do their own kindness projects, and that little grant paid for the postage to send out all the hearts, because I realised that it was going to cost me quite a lot to send out all these parcels. And so that was amazing. So that covered that. And I guess, you know, what I thought would be the end of it was actually the beginning, because then 1,000 people received a heart, and a lot of those people had a very powerful response to that and then wanted to be part of it. And I think the simplicity of the project and the simplicity of the hearts and their visual appeal and they're very tactile, all those things, I think, just make it feel doable for people. So a lot of people go, oh, I'd love to give this to somebody. It'd be a really simple, easy thing to give. It's not over the top. It's not expensive. It's not extravagant. It's very simple. And then I think for people who are crafty, they straight away go, oh, I could make these, and this would be a really beautiful way to express kindness. And one of the most beautiful things for me out of the whole thing over the last 6 years has been to see how many people out there are passionate about kindness and want to share it and want to increase the amount of kindness we have in our world. And I just find that incredibly touching.
Yeah. So it started off with you making them and sending them out, and then other people distributing them. But now you've got a whole community of heartists. artists, is that what you call them? Who are actually making arts and sending them out and connecting with each other. So how did that come about?
It just grew very organically. So once the initial 1,000 hearts had been sent out and I got the responses back, and then I started to realise, oh, this is not something that I can easily just, you know, shut down the Facebook page and finish. People are very passionate. And at that stage it was people contacting me and saying, can I have a heart? So I continued to make them and send them out. But I was thinking, oh, this is not sustainable. I wasn't in an amazing financial situation at the time, having just come out of a marriage and gone through the, you know, financially devastating consequences of that. So I sort of thought, oh, I can't just continue to send hearts out forever, because it's, you know, costing me money for materials and postage and all that stuff. So I kept sending them out in response to requests, but I also stepped back a bit and thought, how, if this is going to continue, how do I want that to look? And the other side of it was that people started connecting with me asking if they could make the hearts. So I started thinking, if other people are making them as well, then we can do a lot more with it than just me doing it. And so, yeah, it started very slowly. You know, a few people started making them. I created a template for the hearts and an instruction sheet on how to sew them, and I started sending that out to people so that the hearts would be a similar size and shape. So it became the 1,000 hearts heart, because obviously hearts are everywhere. But, you know, this was, I guess, a particular shape that I had drawn. And it just kind of went from there. And then over time, I set up the Etsy shop. People started wanting to purchase hearts. They wanted to purchase kits. So it really did grow organically. I was kind of responding to queries and the demand, I guess, in our community. It wasn't like I ever had a strategic plan to set up a business and global project. It was very much, oh, my goodness, you know, what's happened to this tiny idea that I had? All of a sudden it's something. And I think, you know, I hope that that part of my story is encouraging for others to hear, that, you know, I think people look at where it is now, which is just boggles the mind, where it's grown to, and they think, oh, I could never do that. I could never set something up that was global and, you know, with an Etsy shop and a branding and all that stuff. But if I had seen 6 years ago where it was now, I would have said the same thing. Oh, I could never set that up. I don't have the time. I don't have the capacity. I don't have the skill. I don't have the ideas. But it did just, it grew itself. It was sort of like having a child, is a good metaphor, actually. Like, I started with this tiny little helpless baby that, you know, I was caring for all the time, and you just don't know where that can go. And now it's got a life of its own and is out in the world, and I'm just sitting back going, wow, I created that. That's amazing. But I'm not quite sure how it happened.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think what's so great about it is, like you were saying before, it's such a simple thing that, you know, a lot of people can actually get involved in, because it's not to make a heart. It's not some big extravagant thing that you have to, you know, study and everything to do.
No.
And I think, though, that the heart itself, I think, would have such a powerful impact on the people. Firstly, the people that are giving, because obviously, like you're saying, giving kindness helps you as well, but also the people that are receiving the heart. I can only imagine the impact that it's having on them as well, to receive that piece of love and kindness. And it's not even necessarily the heart itself, but the thought behind it and what people are doing in order to give it to them. So who is actually, I know there's a huge variety here, but who is actually receiving the heart? And have you received any feedback from anyone that's received them in terms of how it's helped them or affected them?
Yeah, so much feedback. There's so many stories. So in terms of who receives the heart, I've set it up, or I've tried to set it up so that anyone can receive the heart. So my work history is in working for nonprofits. So there is a point to me telling you this. So when you're delivering services to people through a nonprofit organisation, you always have eligibility criteria and restrictions around who those services can be delivered to, because of your funding source and your, you know, the strategic objectives of that organisation that you're working for. So you are restricted in those ways, which is the only way it can operate. But, or I should say, and, because I really value the work that nonprofits do and I'm very proud to be part of that. But I guess for me, I got to a point as well where I was thinking, I just want to do something that anyone can access, so that I don't have to say, you know, you're not the right age or you're not in the right category to receive this, that it can just go to anyone. So I purposely set it up so that the hearts are literally for anyone who needs a bit of kindness, and I believe that is everybody. So that's the kind of theory behind it, that the hearts are for everyone. In terms of where they've actually been given out, I think it is working in that way to some degree. Like, there are people who make, a lot of people who make them specifically for groups of people who are undergoing challenges and struggles in their life. So, you know, hospitals, palliative care wards, you know, services for people who are homeless or escaping domestic violence. I could sit here for the entire podcast episode and list all the services and places that they've gone. Another huge part of the Thousand Hearts movement has been bringing hearts into schools, and they've been used in schools. There's a principal who has hearts in her office. So if a child is, or a student is sent to her office because they've been misbehaving, she will sit and make hearts with them and give them a heart. Yeah, which I just think is...
what a beautiful idea.
Yeah, so rather than a, you know, punishment or a, you know, scary thing to go to the principal's office, you go and you sew, and that allows time to talk through what's happened and to process what's happened. And I think when I hear about those sorts of things being done with the hearts, that just makes me incredibly happy that I started it, because I think, you know, to bring those lessons of kindness and resilience into children's learning is incredibly powerful and has been a lack in the education system. So I think we are turning more towards that in certain schools and certain areas, but we're not doing it enough, I don't think. So when I hear about the hearts being a part of that sort of thing, it's delightful. So, yeah, I mean, I could talk for hours about where they've gone. They're businesses and cafes that just have them on their counters to give out. There are vets and doctor's surgeries and, you know, mental health units and wards that have hearts available. Yeah, a lot of places.
Is there anyone in particular that has given you feedback that has stuck with you? Any stories like that?
There are a lot of those stories, actually. The ones that stick the most are generally some of the earlier stories, and I think that's because I probably had more time and capacity to hear more detailed stories, and I was the, you know, at that point I was the only person people could give feedback to. Now I think people are sharing stories with the person who gives them the heart, which is most of the time now not me. Even though I still give out a lot of hearts, the vast majority of hearts are now being shared by others. So one of our long-term heartists is a woman in WA who, at the very beginning of the project, she was given, I think she might have been given one of the original 1,000, I'm not sure, but it was very early on, and she was given that heart while she was sitting at the bedside of her 4-year-old grandson who was undergoing chemotherapy. So she was doing a lot of the care and the sitting, because her daughter, whose child it was, had, I think, 2 or 3 other children who she had to care for. Okay. So Janice was doing a lot of the care. So she was given a heart, and she's a beautiful, kind soul who sews, and it just meant so much to her that somebody gave her this at a moment where obviously you're just undergoing such distress and pain and sadness in your life. And because she was in the hospital sitting for such long periods of time, sewing hearts was something she could do. So she connected with me and started making hearts and giving them out in the, you know, paediatric oncology wards and then beyond that space as well, to children, to their families, to the nurses and doctors there. And her little grandson passed away, which is obviously unimaginably devastating for everyone. And I was grief-stricken when I heard, because I'd been connected with this person for a while by then, but she's continued to make hearts, and I think, you know, she still gives them out in hospitals and now has extended that to other places and people, and it's helped her through her grief. You know, nothing can make that better, nothing can heal that wound, but I think, you know, there are things we can do that help us process loss and grief, and when our hearts are broken, it's not an easy fix and there's not an easy mend, and there's always that scar on our heart, I think, when we have that kind of loss. But there are things that we can do that help us get through and help us integrate that loss and function in our lives despite that sort of emotional pain. So she's always, Janice is always someone whose story I share because she was, it's such a powerful story, and the fact that it has been something that she continues and continues to this day to do. And I think that shows, and it's the power of the hearts, but it's also just the power of kindness, I think, when we are able to be kind to others and particularly to ourselves, we get through difficult times in our lives. I do think kindness helps that. And I've had another, there's a couple of more succinct stories. One was there's a huge advocate of Thousand Hearts who lives in the northeast of Tasmania, and she works for a non-profit organisation and gives out a lot of hearts in her work. So she's working with people in a small community who are, you know, in significant distress. And she sent me a message one day and just sort of said, "Today your hearts helped to prevent 2 suicides."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she had seen 2 people that, you know, who were in that space where they couldn't imagine a way forward in their lives, and she had given them a heart as part of her, obviously she had spoken to them and done what she needed to do to ensure their safety. But she said the hearts were so powerful in these 2 separate situations that, you know, and I'll never forget the way she told the story, that, you know, one of the women took the heart and tucked it into her pocket and kind of patted her pocket like, this is what's going to keep me going.
Yeah.
And so those sorts of stories, I don't really have words to tell you what they mean to me. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Mm. And there's a lot, you know, people with mental illness have contacted me to say that, you know, Making Hearts has saved their life and been the thing that's kept them going. And, you know, I mean, I think it's interesting. The hearts are a very, very, very powerful symbol of something much bigger than what the actual object is. And for some reason, and I can never fully understand or explain the reason, but for some reason I think people just very much connect with the symbolism of them. And I do think part of the reason is because I started this project with nothing but pure intentions to put kindness into the world. There was no agenda to make money or take advantage of the situation or get publicity or increase my likes on social media or whatever. The intention was absolutely purely about giving some goodness out into the world. And I think somehow when we do that with that pureness, I just think there's magic in that.
Yeah, and it sounds like now it's created like a ripple effect where, because it's not only you doing it, all these other people are now doing it from the kindness of their own hearts, no pun intended there.
Exactly. Yeah,
and
exactly.
So it's spread like that, and it sounds like there's a whole group now of people that are very like-minded, like you, who are now getting involved. So it sounds absolutely incredible. And like I was talking to you before we started about a little bit about me and how when you are going through something tough, how just having a little symbol of something, like I was saying to you, I had a little plush toy that someone gave to me. It's amazing how much comfort something like that can actually give you, and courage, I guess, and make you think, you know what, I can keep going, I can do this. And it's not only necessarily the actual object that does it, but the fact that someone's given it to you out of care, out of kindness, it can have a huge impact. Though I can only imagine how many people are in a similar position, whether it be children or adults or people going through all sorts of different things. But along the lines of, say, that First Lady Janice, I think you said her name was, that how much it helped her to be able to do this with you. How much has it helped you since you've started? How much has it helped you along the way?
Immeasurably, I would have to say. And I think, you know, I spoke before about, you know, when your heart is broken. And I think there is powerful symbolism in stitching hearts together. You know, you are physically taking 2 halves of a heart and stitching them together to create a whole heart. And I wasn't clever enough to see the meaning in that before I started it. I wish I had been, but and I guess paired with that, it's hand stitching. So it's by its nature, it's a slow, mindful process that slows you down and makes you sit still. You can't sew while you're running on a treadmill. You can't sew while you're driving. You can't sew while you're reading a book, even though I have tried. you know, you kind of have to take time. You have to sit with yourself and sew. And I think for me, starting that, and I never do things by half, so, you know, 1,000 of them, I had committed to doing 1,000. So I was sitting a lot during that time and just hand stitching. And I guess that forced me to have time and space in which I processed the grief and the loss that my marriage breakdown created in my life, and to actually kind of reflect, I guess, on how I wanted to move forward as a single person, as a divorced mother. And it did give me a lot of time to think about who do I want to be. And that's, you know, 1,000 Hearts started because I did start having those thought processes around, you know, what do I want my contribution to be? And I think when you go through, you know, I mean, I got married and I thought that was going to be forever and that we would have our beautiful family and our beautiful children and we'd grow old and sit in the rocking chairs together on the veranda, you know, like that was definitely my intention and my belief of what would come out of that marriage. And, you know, and I married a good man. It was just that we were unable to make that work. And I think because he's such a good man, it made it even harder in certain ways that I wasn't able just to walk away and go, oh, well, write him off. He was a bastard or whatever. So there was, you know, real grief and real, you know, it was necessary for me to reflect on and accept that it hadn't worked between us, I guess. Yeah, so it made me think, if that's not going to be my future with this person and with that family that I thought I would have, and if I'm going to be on my own, who do I want to be? And what do I want to have in my life that brings it meaning and offers a contribution? And kindness was the thing that just kept coming up. I've been very fortunate to have been on the receiving end of acts of kindness in my life, and so I understand the power of that and how that does give you strength and courage when you're going through times of difficulty. So kindness became the focus for me, and 1,000 Hearts was the vehicle through which I started to express that kindness and try and increase the amount of goodness in my world and for the people around me.
So why is being kind so important to you?
I think at the heart of kindness is love, and I think love is, it's hard to talk about love without being cliched about it, but I think, you know, and I'm not talking about a particular kind of love, you know, romantic or familial love. I think, you know, when I talk about this, it's really around that, the deeper part of humanity that we connect with when we actually offer kind of compassion and openness to somebody with good intentions, that kind of love, you know, the open-hearted love that we can offer without any conditions and without needing it returned. And there's all sorts of different ways it's been written about in religions and traditional senses. I'm not a religious person, but I certainly, oh, I've got a nice little story about that actually. So my Dutch grandmother, so my Oma, she was very religious. She was dedicated Christian in her life, and I have always been not religious. And so when I was about 15 or 16, I thought, oh, I was really close to my grandparents, and I thought, oh, I need to tell Oma that I don't believe in God because it's such an important part of who I am. And I was very frightened about how she might respond to that, or if she would judge me or reject me or be disappointed in me or what have you. But I summoned up all my courage and went to her house and had our cup of tea and a chat. And then I said, you know, Oma, I want to talk to you about something that's really important to me, and I need you to know that part of who I am is that I don't share your faith and I don't believe in God. And she leaned forward and gave me this really sort of piercing look that she had, and she said, do you believe in love? And I said, yeah, of course, you know, love is the most important thing. And she sat back in her chair and she said, then you and me believe the same thing.
Oh.
Yeah. And I, wow. And that for me has been such an important lesson. And she was obviously a very special person to be able to approach me in that way. But, you know, I think at the heart of everyone's faith and belief systems is either love or a search for love, in that sense of that pure acceptance and compassion and openness that we get when we sit in that space of actually truly loving another person or truly loving humanity as a whole, actually, which can be a little bit harder.
Wow. Do you think that having worked in the nonprofit space has also impacted you in all of this?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, I've worked across different roles in different organisations with different clients. So I've worked with older people who were socially isolated. I'm currently working with people impacted by cancer. I've worked with young people. I've done a fair bit of suicide intervention work and general support for people in different situations. And then in the hospital, obviously working with people who are unwell or dying, and likewise their families who are undergoing the stress of that and the grief. And worked a lot with people who are, I guess, bereaved and in that grief space, and have been there myself. And I think across all those different organisations, different jobs, different clients, the thing that always matters the most is the connection between you and that other person, and that you are able to offer acceptance of their situation and kindness, I guess, but deeper than that, you know, that compassion and sit in a space of love. Not to say that you love every client that you come across, but that you are coming from a place of love, which for me means wanting the best for that person and offering my best to try and help them find a good outcome, and listening with an open and compassionate heart. And I think that's where, across the years, I started learning, because I had all the imposter syndrome and insecurities, of course, when I started the work. And, oh, did I do that right? And did I say the right thing? And, oh, my God, I moved away from the model that I'm supposed to use, or I was outside of our model of care, or I said something clumsy. But over time, I realised that it didn't actually matter so much what I said, as long as I said it with respect and compassion and always keeping that person's best interests at heart. And you can come back from a lot of wrong things if you are open and loving in the way that you do that. So, yes, working in the nonprofit space with people undergoing challenges in their lives has absolutely shaped who I am, and is a huge part of why I started A Thousand Hearts.
We need more people like this around, I think.
They're out there. That's the beautiful thing about A Thousand Hearts. I've connected with so many people who share these beliefs. I mean, it's probably made me unrealistically optimistic about human nature, because I just have so many beautiful people in my life that contact me and all around the world who are focused on kindness and just want to help others and make others' lives a little bit better. It's absolutely not only restored my faith in humanity, but grown it to the point where I'm really like, if you're feeling cynical, just be reassured that there is so much goodness out there in the world, and so many people just working quietly to offer love, which I just think is amazing.
Yeah, definitely. So I will pop your details in the show notes for this episode, but how can people get involved in this?
Sure. The best way is just to go to the website. So it's 1000hearts with the number 1000.com.au. That has pretty much everything you need to get started. So it has, there's some free resources on the website. There's information, there are some stories and photos. There's a little bit about me, and there's a link to the Etsy shop if you are wanting to purchase kits. But there's also like a free instruction sheet with templates. So if you've got materials and things at home that you can use, you can download the instructions and template for free and get started. So I've purposely set it up to be as inclusive as I can imagine it being, so that for people who have financial backing to purchase, they're very welcome to support the project in that way. But if you want to support the project by just contributing to, you know, your own community through making hearts, then you can do that with the resources. My intention with the project has always just been to increase the amount of kindness in the world. I don't really care how people do that, as long as that's their intention and that's the way they go about it. And that I do ask that people acknowledge A Thousand Hearts, that they're part of that community, because I've seen the power that holds for people to be part of a community. So I always like for people to honour that and to honour, you know, the origins of that and the, yeah, you know, there's obviously the intellectual property component of it too, which, as the child of two artists, I'm quite passionate about just letting people know that this is part of a bigger project that's come from someone who has set it up with good intentions, I suppose, and to stay true to that when you're getting involved.
So I have one last question for you. Sure. What is your best tip for making the world a better place?
Oh, just a tiny question. I think that we all need to think about who we want to be and think about what we want our contribution to be and really look at our values and what brings meaning to our lives and to sit with ourselves in that. I think unless we all are accountable for what we contribute, the world is never going to get any better. But when you actually sit down with yourself and think about contributing something positive, if everybody's doing that, then the world really becomes a better place. So I would actually encourage people, you know, I think sometimes it's also easy to hook into an idea that is about giving to others that actually allows people to bypass actually looking at themselves. And for anyone listening or engaging in A Thousand Hearts, I would always encourage you to, you know, think about what is this doing for you? What is the gain for you and why is that meaningful? And to think about, yeah, who do you want to be? And I think when I come across times of difficulty and challenge, that's always the question I ask myself. Like, okay, I'm feeling disrupted or angry or sad, or I've had a loss, or someone's treated me in a way that's making me feel upset in certain ways. And I always come back to that. Who do I want to be in this situation? I can't change the situation. I can't change what's happened or how that person's treating me, but I can change who I am in this. And I always try and come back to let me be as kind as I can be. And sometimes that means setting boundaries or stepping away. Sometimes stepping away is the kindest you can be. And sometimes it's about being kind to yourself. And so I think for me, making the world a better place is about thinking, if that's your goal, what do you want your contribution to be? And then be really, 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 really compassionate with yourself about how you go about it, because you will fall over and you will have moments where you're not the person that you want to be and that you can't be your best self. And just in those moments, be kind to yourself. And if in doubt, offer kindness to someone else and just sit in the feeling of that, because it's pretty beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Sarah, and sharing your story and the story of 1,000 Hearts and spreading kindness throughout the world globally now as well, which is amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jess.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspirational Tales. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd love it if you could please share it with your family and friends so that we can inspire more people. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review, and make sure that you have subscribed or followed the podcast on whichever platform that you are listening to it on so that you can stay up to date as new episodes are released. Thanks again, and I look forward to you joining me for the next episode of Inspirational Tales.